Welcome to Targeted, True Crime, Domestic Violence. We tell stories of those who were targeted by domestic abuse and investigate cases of family violence, using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Details may be graphic, and listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Hello, my friends. We are winding down season 3 now, and I want you to know how thankful I am for you. Thank you for writing me, encouraging me, and encouraging the survivors who have shared their stories with us. Thank you for telling others about the podcast and really growing our audience. I'm amazed at how many people listen all over the world. While the United States has the largest percentage of our audience, I want to give a shout out to Australia, Norway, Sweden, South Korea, Germany, Canada, Singapore, and New Zealand, who also have really high numbers of listeners. For our season finale, I wanted to give you a heads up that I'll be doing a question and answer session, since we haven't done one for a very long time. I already have a good bank of questions that people have been sending me over the past year, but if you have any questions that you want me to answer, please send them to me via email at targetedpodcast@gmail.com, and I will try to work in as many as I can. I'll also share with you a sneak peek of what I'm working on for the future in that episode. I've just obtained the blessing of a family to work on a particular case involving a missing woman, and many suspect domestic violence at the hands of her husband. It's quite different than anything we've done before, and I'm excited to work on the case. She is still missing, so perhaps we can figure something out. This case is bringing out my inner Nancy Drew, or since I'm not a teenager anymore, perhaps I should say my inner Miss Marple. Today I'm bringing you the story of Fiona, a bright, creative woman who experienced domestic violence from multiple men in a few different countries. Despite being the repeated target of violence, Fiona wanted better for herself and her children. She started college when she was 44 years old, continuing through until she had a master's degree. She wrote her first book, titled I Did It, You Can Too, to motivate others to persevere in their education. Just this week, Fiona is releasing her newest book, called River Never Smooth, Reclaiming Power After Abuse. It is a memoir that is based on her life's experience as someone who is targeted by abuse. Rather than it being an autobiography in which she tells her story in the first person, Fiona created the book with a main character named Angelique, who experiences the things Fiona did in her real life. Fiona joins us today to tell us firsthand about her story, which means she is opening the story up a bit wider for you, more personally, my dear listeners, than what she did in the book. She's going to tell it from her perspective as opposed to using the main character called Angelique. After hearing Fiona's story, I think you might still be interested in reading her book as it comes from such a different perspective from what you'll hear today. I'll include links in my show notes to the book on Amazon, as well as Fiona's website. Let's hear from Fiona as she tells us about her first marriage.
My story is a long one. In the first place, I've been married 3 times, so I had to do it 3 times in order to get it right. In my first marriage, it was like about 10 months into the marriage, I was about 3 months or so pregnant. And I found that my husband used to just be out really late. Our marriage, it has a whole lot of background to it in that it wasn't really a happy one. because of issues where my family was concerned in that they did not want me to go ahead and get married at that age. But, you know, sometimes when you're young, you kind of do what you want to do. So I was one of those. So my parents weren't really happy about our marriage. But for the most part, my husband at that time and I, we kind of lived quietly. But I noticed like a couple of months into the marriage, he was always out late and sometimes he would spend weekends out and that kind of stuff. And I kind of got worried, but I was never really the one to speak up. But then one day my mom came home. She went to a theater show and she came home and she said to me, "You know who I saw in the theater? And not only saw in the theater, but he was there kissing up a woman. Not ordinary kissing, tongue kiss. So I know that it's not an ordinary friend. And I can't understand, look at you, pregnant, and he doesn't care. He's just doing his own thing." Well, of course, I felt really bad about that. I was ashamed because those were the same thing my parents were telling me about in the beginning. And here's my mom telling me that she saw my husband in the cinema with a woman. She did not confront him. She just left the show halfway and went home. At that time, I felt also ashamed because it was my mother that saw this stuff. And what can you say to your mom when she can tell you plain and straight, this is what I saw? At home at that time when she came and I was cooking, so when she started to talk, I didn't want to cook her anything anymore. So I sat down in the chair and after she left, I fell asleep. I didn't wake up until he came home. And when he came home, he went to the kitchen, he went through some mail. But then when he looked for his dinner, he didn't see any. So he shouted to me, "Fiona, what happened? You haven't cooked us yet?" And I did not answer him. I just got up and went to the bedroom. Well, he followed me to the bedroom and he realized that like I wasn't speaking. So he was like, "Are you deaf or something? You didn't hear me speaking to you?" And I said to him, "I thought that the woman you were with in the cinema would prepare dinner for you." I could see like the blood drained from his face. And he looked at me like evilly and he said, "Who have you been speaking with?" I did not answer, but he chucked me. He pushed me so hard. I hit towards the wardrobe. Now I'm pregnant. Hit the wardrobe and lost my balance and fell. At that time, he continued talking. And I answered him back and he slapped me so hard across my face. My head, it's as if though I can feel that jerk that my head did. And my mouth, I started tasting blood instantly. When he realized that, he just left the house. He slammed the door and went his way. I prayed, "Lord, help me not to lose this baby." But at that point, I said to myself, wow, he's my husband. He did something wrong. And because I'm reacting to it, he got upset. Number one, he was trying to say it wasn't him. It was a lie. Or my mother didn't see right, but I know that she saw right. She wouldn't come and tell me that if she didn't see right. So that was like the first instance of abuse in that first marriage. Yes, I stayed for a lot of years more. Well, when I say a lot of years, that marriage lasted 6 years. But it was continuous, all the different kind of stuff. One time, he even took a woman in my house on our bed. And it was just devastating because I said to myself, you know, this is the worst disrespect a spouse can do to a marriage. And the thing is, my family, they did not say much when he was doing certain things like, that day when he took the woman to the house, my parents were home. I was out and he arranged for me to be out. In the United States here, you would call it a two-family home. This was in Guyana, South America. And I lived at the first floor, and my parents lived on the second floor. And they knew, but they did not say anything to him. But they were upset with, like, me. But they were never the kind to, like, get into our issues. I was the one who, I did not feel that I should leave the marriage because I'm a praying person. I believe a whole lot in prayer. So I used to be praying for my husband. First of all, when we got married, he was in church, but he left the church shortly after, not even a year later, and he was doing his own thing. Things got from bad to worse because financially he would not live up to his responsibilities. At that time, I didn't know anything about financial abuse, but I learned of it later. And I would be the one having to upkeep the house, upkeep the children. For the most part, I'm spending money that I work for doing everything for the home. Prior to that, he used to give me money to go to the supermarket. But when I go to the supermarket and I reach home, I have to write on a piece of paper how I spent every cent of the money that he gave me. And eventually I got tired of that. And I said to him, you know something, you can keep your money. And he did not mind that at all. He just kept his money, and groceries and everything else were added to my lengthy budget. It was bad in a sort of way in that my daughter, by this time, she was the first child. By this time, she was about 4 or 5 years old. And it was heartrending sometimes to watch her. Sometimes for no reason, he would come home, make a noise, we would fight, and you would just see her scamper under the bed or under the table. It was just heartrending to watch her. To a certain extent, I told myself I didn't want to continue living like that. And eventually, I decided, you know, I'm going to get out of this marriage. And with the help of my parents, and I must say my parents were always supportive in spite of the fact that I went ahead and married someone that they told me not to go ahead and do. They were always supportive. So I left Guyana and went to Barbados. I had to leave my children behind because going to Barbados, I wasn't sure what I would have met out there. Then I would have had to look for work. At that time, I had a second child. When I left home, he was 9 months old.
There is so much we could unpack here, but I don't want to detract from Fiona's story by talking too much about too many things. I will simply focus on one area. It was a bit difficult to choose, but one of the things that intrigued me and made me want to get lost in research was the influence of Fiona's faith and religion. Fiona said she did not want to leave the relationship because she was a praying woman, and I wanted to see what the academic research said about this. Is this similar to experiences of other survivors of faith? Before we start talking about the research, I have to admit that it is not uncommon in Christian churches for there to be an emphasis on women being subordinate to men, and for this belief to be a catalyst for an abused woman to believe that she must endure in the marriage. While I don't think this is a Christian interpretation of what the Bible has to say, I know there are other people who do. Research by Geisbrecht and Sebsick interviewed evangelical Christian women and found that their churches and faith functioned to either help them or hurt them as they struggled to cope with their abuse. I can see how there can be this duality. After my divorce, I had one church that was not helpful. They took sides. I went to a new church, and that church was full of very caring, wonderful people who prayed with me, who talked with me, who counseled me, and stood right next to me during the hardest times. In the article by Geisbrecht and Sebsick, they wrote, quote, "The woman's faith functioned as a meaning-making framework that could either engender shame and guilt or inspire hope and empower transformative change," unquote. In other words, the church, their faith, could either be good or bad for them. For some religious women, they think it's their duty to be passive and forgiving no matter what the husband does. For others, their faith helps them to see that they are not treated like somebody who is made in the image of God. Essentially, the problem is this. Some Christians believe that it's wrong to divorce, using a verse from the Old Testament, Malachi 2:6, to support the view. In the New King James Version, it reads, quote,
"For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce, for it covers one's garment with violence, says the Lord of hosts."
Unquote. I am not a theologian, but I have heard many Christians say that divorce isn't allowed because God hates divorce. They're using that passage. But that interpretation completely disregards the point of the passage and the cultural context. It's telling men not to be unfaithful to their wife and do not be cruel to her by divorcing her and leaving her destitute and unprotected from violence, as might have happened nearly 2,500 years ago in about 450 BC, when a woman who was divorced suddenly had no protection, no money, no way to make a living. The verse is certainly not an argument for Christian women to stay in an abusive marriage. If anything, it's kind of the opposite, because it's telling men not to allow violence to happen to your wife. Again, this isn't my area of expertise, though, so I'll move on. Other academic studies have looked at the importance of faith and prayer in Christian women and how it helped them to cope while being targeted. Important research by Wang et al. In 2009 found that 70% of women who identified as Christian said that their faith provided them the strength to leave the perpetrator. The last interesting bit of research, one that took me by surprise, is that men who attended church once a week or more were 50% less likely to be physically aggressive to their partners, according to Ellison et al. In the Journal of Family Issues. Similarly, Coonrady et al. Found that men who said that religion is important to them personally had lower rates of physical violence against others. This is interesting, but it's not backed up by all studies. Others, such as one by Brinkerhoff et al., found similar rates of intimate partner violence among Christian males and a representative sample of Canadian men. So in that study, there is no difference based on the man's religion. In Fiona's case, her husband didn't seem to be a man of faith, as he dropped off from religious observances soon after they were married. Prayer was integral to her coping and helped sustain her, similar to the survivors that Wang et al. Studied about 10 years ago. Let's rejoin Fiona as she tells about the next part of her life.
It was the hardest thing I ever did, leaving my two children behind and going to live in another country. Prior to that, I had tried separating from my husband, but I didn't get it done. And at one stage, I realized I needed to get out because sometimes blows would be too much. And I used to say it's either he will kill me or I will kill him. So eventually I just decided to leave when I went to Barbados. Well, I am one of those who probably, you know, it is said sometimes that you attract the same kind of people all the time. Or it was my penchant for making bad decisions. So I ended up in another relationship. That relationship, it started good, but at the beginning, I really did not feel love for that gentleman that came into my life. I tried to tell him that, but he was head over heels in love with me. I reasoned to myself, in my first relationship, I had loved him, and I didn't get it back. I was hurt so much. So this relationship, if he loves me, this may be the better way to go, because I would not be hurt. Eventually, we got married. Even though I wasn't head over heels in love with him, I cared a lot for him, and he was a nice guy. But that same nice guy ended up wanting to have mother and daughter. So I found myself running yet again because I could not subject my daughter to that kind of treatment and that kind of abuse. It was terrible. But eventually, I broke free. It was not easy to do that, but eventually, I got out of it. But as I said, it was basically prayer. I had friends that I spoke with, not many when I was in Guyana, I used to speak with one friend. And in Barbados, I used to speak with one friend. And I find that not keeping everything to yourself, it helps you to stay sane because there is an outlet. I don't know how some women do it when they don't have any friends and they keep everything bottled up inside. But God helped me that I was able to get out of that.
Fiona leaves the second abusive marriage, just as many women. In fact, being a survivor of intimate partner violence is a risk factor for being a victim of it again. So it's not unusual for one survivor to have had multiple relationships with a violent partner. Fiona still wants her life to be different, and she enters into a third relationship. Before she tells us about this man, though, let's pause for a word from our sponsors.
After that, it was yet another relationship, only this third one, it was not a marriage. It was just a relationship. And again, bad choice. I ended up falling for somebody who said to me, my wife and I, we live in the same house, but we are about to have a divorce. And my head was telling me the right thing to do, but my heart was telling me the wrong thing to do, and I followed my heart. A couple months later, and this was a relationship where after being unable to love for like nearly 7 years, I fell madly in love with this guy and thought he was everything, but then realized that he was lying because him and his wife got back together. And when they got back together, he told me plain and straight he has to sever the relationship with me, and that nearly killed me. But I kept going on, and then eventually he and his wife had some kind of argument, and then he shot her. She did not die. I was worried, but the thing is, at that time, he and I had broken off. We were no longer in an intimate relationship. But after he was locked up for a little, he was placed on bail after about a month or so. Because he and I were in a relationship shortly before that incident, he walked right back into my life and just was controlling. And it was something I really wanted to get away from, but it was just hard to do because I couldn't shake him. After that, he walked right back into my life, expecting me to be there for him. And yes, I used to be worried. I used to be worried. And it was a mixture of fear and, I don't know, shame and everything. I just could not get myself out of that situation when he walked back in my life. It was really hard. Being at the point where I really loved him, I really couldn't let it go. Eventually, he came to the point where he got everything back together, got himself back together, and then walked out. I struggled, but eventually prayer brought me through. Eventually, one day, wasn't really listening to the radio, but I came upon a radio program. It was a psychologist talking about relationship issues. And the guy asked a question. He said something about, are you in denial of your situation? And that is where I started to listen to that radio station. And it was as if though everything that man was saying, he was talking to me. After that, I really pulled myself together. It didn't happen right away, but falling on my face to God, asking him to help me, take me back where I used to be, because at one time I walked with the Lord. And then during all these episodes in my life, I had strayed. But God was good to me. He was good. And up to today, I can thank him for seeing me through all those years of hardship and tears and sorrow, but I've made it.
Fiona moved to the United States. She is married again, and it sounds like she is in a good place with her relationships. She indicated vaguely that early on in the United States, perhaps there was another relationship, but she didn't want to discuss it in detail.
Things got bad before it got really good. but I really don't want to share much on that. At this stage, it's really good, and it's been that way for a couple of years. I'm thankful.
I asked Fiona if she had ever tried to have access to resources through law enforcement or social services.
I kept everything to myself. I really never went to the police. And, you know, I was thinking about that only the other night. And back in Guyana at that time, I don't even know if there was anything about where they would raise awareness of abuse. I did not know of any help that I could get. Everything I did, it was like on my own. I had friends who would tell me, girl, you need to get out of that and things like that. But I never really sought help, whether be it police or shelters or counseling. I never really did that.
Fiona then discussed the book she's written.
My memoir, it tells my story at length. The hurt, the pain, how I got out, how I got over. And also in that memoir, I have done some research where I find information for people who are struggling with abuse. And that's the main reason why I decided to write. It was on my heart for a while, but then I came to realize that sometimes what you go through, it's not so much for you, but to help someone else. So in writing it, I decided that I'm going to research and I'm going to use my experience to educate people who are in this kind of situation, the situation that I passed through, help them to really know how to get out, how to identify abuse and know how to deal with it, how to live a life that is free of regrets, because people that have been abused, they look back and they keep regretting that this ever happened and don't seem to be able to rise above those circumstances. So that's what I'm focused my book around, highlighted certain things that you must look for in a relationship. And then I directed my readers to sources that they can find in order to help them. I've also placed discussion questions in there where this book can be phenomenal in book club. And it's not only for women, because men are abused also. Statistics show that 1 in 25 men are injured in abusive relationships. So that's what I really have in the book. Actually, I had written it as fiction at first, all because I told myself I could not deal with my critics. I did not want people to know that Angelique Castor is Fiona Harewood. But then I've come to a place where I've risen above my circumstances and I don't care about critics at this stage. I've been through it. I've walked that road and I've seen healing. I've felt healing.
Prayer still is important for Fiona as she continues to cope with having survived abuse.
When I was going through all of this stuff, like when I had to leave my children back in Guyana and be in Barbados for about 3 years before I saw them again, I used to pray. I used to say, God, take me back to that place where I can remember or look at these times that I've passed through and smile. And I thank God for answering those prayers. I can look back every day and smile. But I want to help somebody to get there, to be able to look back at what they passed through and smile.
If you would like to learn more about Fiona, you can go to her website, www.fionaharewood.com. Let's hear it from her, not me.
www.fionaharewood.com. That's easy to remember, but the book is called River Never Smooth, Reclaiming Power After Abuse. Now, to go straight to the page for the book, it's my name, fionaharewood.com/river-never-smooth. So it's fionaharewood.com, river never smooth.
At the end of most interviews, I often ask the survivors if they have any advice for family or friends of domestic violence survivors. Here is what Fiona said.
Family and friends matter. And there are times when people are going through things, people who are being abused, and they don't want to talk, and you cannot force them to talk. But as family and friends, you need to be there for them. You need to be there for them, even if you just sit, or sometimes they talk and you just have to listen.
Thank you, Fiona, for sharing your story with us. And you, my dear listeners, don't forget to send me any questions you have for our question and answer season finale. Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted Podcast, True Crime, Domestic Violence. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. It helps other listeners to find us. If you have constructive criticism, I would like to hear it, but I'd appreciate an email about it. You can reach me at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Targeted has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. Links to those will be in the show notes. We also have a Patreon account, which was recently revised so that you can gain early access to ad-free episodes for $1 each. If you want early access to all of the episodes in a month, it will be $4 most months, and there would be no expense for months when we do not have new episodes. Please stay tuned for the promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. I'll include links to them in my show notes. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is targeted by abuse, you are not alone. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a number of different organizations who can help. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, and I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. It may be the hardest thing you ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.
My husband just died.
Recent, right?
Or yep, you're making jokes about it.
Hi, I'm Tawny Flatus, the witty widow and creator of the new podcast feed, Death is Hilarious. When my husband and fellow creator of the Dirty Bits podcast passed away in November of 2019, I immediately fell into writing and comedy as a way to cope. Now, I'm traveling around the country to interview your favorite podcasters and artists on how they found relief from grief on my new show, The Witty Widow. The podcast is slated for release in 2020. Tune in for bonus shows now, like Monday Morning Maisel, where you can join Midge Maisel and me as we cope with the loss of our spouses and learn lessons about moving through grief with comedy. And also be sure to check out Entertaining Grief, a series where I talk about how watching and relating to movies and shows has been helping me gain perspective on and cope with the death of my husband. Search Death is Hilarious in your favorite podcast listening app or visit tawnyvoice.com/podcast to subscribe and listen in.
We're going to make it through this show. We're not going to get over this show, but we're going to make it through this show together.